Bobby, you are now in Chicago. Why are you here? And what have you got to say to your brothers and sisters in this community?
I've been brought here by the administration, or might I say the Nixon-Agnew-Mitchell regime. They've worked together to seemingly allow me to testify as one of the witnesses in the Chicago 8, Chicago 8 trial.
But tell us what's happened to you since you were last.
Well, I was back in San Francisco and placed in the hole, but one of the things that happened to me, as it happened to many people across the country, was that I was affected by the fascist operations, the fact that our brother, Deputy Chairman Fred Hampton of the Illinois chapter of the Black Panther Party, and brother Mark Clark were viciously and fascistly murdered, has affected to me. That has happened to me in the sense that it makes me, and I'm pretty sure it makes all of the people, my brothers and sisters and everyone, understand the rampant state of fascism that's growing in America, that this very trial that's going on is not inseparable from, I mean, that the very fact that this trial is going on, the very fact that I was pulled into it in the way it was, the very fact that the other seven defendants are put in the situation that they're in, is, it's all not inseparable. And being thrown in the hole in San Francisco over a Black Panther Party paper, being incarcerated and watching lies and techniques being used by the power structure to try to smash the Black Panther Party, to try to smash the progressive revolutionary movement in this country as a whole, has even enlightened me more and showed me that the masses of the people are going to have to recognize that their constitutional rights are in gross danger. If your constitutional rights are in gross danger, then in fact our very lives as a people, workers, employed and unemployed, black, brown, green, polka dot red, Puerto Rican, and even the Eskimos in Alaska, are all subjected to fascist oppression in America, because these human rights, we know, is the things that ensures our right to survive and live and to be able to change the governmental system, to be able to protest. And Mitchell, John Mitchell, who is the Gestapo second man, is moving in a fashion to help further on the creation of the police state that already exists, but with their misleading demagogic techniques. And being brought back here to Chicago, I hope that the people all together can really see through the operations of the fascist state in America, because my experience prior, having been gagged, having been unjustly sentenced to 4 years in prison because I demanded my constitutional rights as any human being, a citizen, should. This experience shows me that all together we're going to have to move to a higher level. Because the people are using their constitutional rights more and moving to a higher level, you'll find that the establishment is consistently also moving to a higher level in violation specifically of constitutional rights and of all the people, and especially the genocidal attacks, attempts and attempts to exterminate the Black Panther Party with murders and fascist frame-ups. In addition to Brother Fred Hampton and Brother Mark Clark being murdered, the attack on the Los Angeles Black Panther Party chapter. In addition to these, let's turn to Connecticut. We find that a Sergeant Vincent DeRosa in Connecticut, New Haven, who is known for his past fascist operations of destroying and attempting to destroy Black organizations, he, DeRosa, and the brother of Warren Kimbrough, who is a policeman from Florida, a detective, they both snuck into jail behind the lawyer's back and threatened Brother Warren Kimbrough, threatened him with the electric chair, and in fact made him fear for his children, who are already in a situation where Brother Warren Kimbrough is actually not guilty. Him maintaining his not guilt changed and made a statement, or rather a plea, that he said he was guilty of second degree murder charges that had been leveled against him and the other 14 members. And it's ironic, but it's so clear with these kinds of operations, when we see police officers and such an operation led by Sergeant Vincent DeRosa to go behind a lawyer's back and violate the constitutional rights, the Fourth, Fifth, and Sixth Amendment, of a party member, of people's rights to further maintain their trumped up charges against party members in their operation to smash the Black Panther Party, to commit genocide and exterminate the party. And I think that knowing and understanding the history of how they've been working behind the scenes, these direct violations of constitutional rights, the situation that Warren Kimbrough has been placed in, understanding all of this, having received this information I'm speaking of, receiving it from a motion that has been filed by Warren Kimbrough's lawyer, revealing this situation of Sergeant Vincent DeRosa and his brother, who's a policeman, his brother who, in fact, snuck into town for this particular operation under a false name, he did. That is, he's a resident, old resident of Connecticut, New Haven, and not even Warren Kimbrough's sister knew that this brother was in town working with Sergeant Vincent DeRosa behind the back of the lawyer and making Warren Kimbrough fear for his life with the electric chair. And in turn, this operation is directly related to something very significant where Vincent De Rosa told or seemingly put forth that Warren Kimbrough would have to fire his lawyer. And this fear tactic, this flagrant violation on the part of the authorities, the establishment, to railroad the party members, etc. All of us in New Haven, Connecticut, the New York 21, the brothers here in Chicago who are incarcerated, these are the kinds of operations that go on and are perpetually continued. And I think that when looking at the situation of this Sergeant Vincent De Rosa, who, well, this is the same De Rosa that got Pig Sams, or is working with Pig Sams, George Sams, to lie on me, the same De Rosa that went to Toronto and got Sams the agent to lie on me and other party members. And these consistent moves and operations have to be brought out in the open. And it's significant that this motion has been filed on the part of Warren Kimbrough's lawyer, who was not at all present when this behind-the-scene fear tactic was being used on Warren Kimbrough. So, being here to testify and looking at the situation of the Black Panther Party, seeing the domestic imperialism that's moving here in America by the Nixon Agnew Mitchell regime, not administration in my opinion, seeing the need to tell the people and show the people that their constitutional rights, people's constitutional rights all across this country are being violated. All we have to say here is that power to the people, and right on.
Charles, how does it feel to be back in Chicago, standing in front of Judge Julius Hoffman today?
Not very pleasant. It's not very pleasant to relive a courtroom that's lopsided, one-sided, where a judge is playing the role of helping the prosecution, leaning towards the prosecution, showing his bias at every way he can think of. A simple thing like referring to Bobby Seale as Mr. Witness, I order you to answer the question. That kind of attitude is something that I don't look forward to. It's reminiscent to me of the Nazi courts that I had some experience historically to review.
Charles, in reference to Bobby's appearance here earlier without you when you were sick and the kind of treatment that he was afforded, what do you think this has to say for not only the judicial system and the institutions which support it, but for the country as well at this time, and its approach and in its treatment of black people, and particularly in its treatment of members of the Black Panther Party.
Well, this is only a continuity of what's been happening for hundreds of years, as far as black people, brown people, yellow people, militant people. This is a common scheme and device, except that it's now more concentrated. It's more accelerated. The answer to it is that fascism is rapidly getting stronger. The attempts of genocide on the Black Panther Party is moving with great pace. The murder of Fred Hampton is a good example, but more predominantly is what's happening throughout the country. In Los Angeles yesterday, a judge sentenced three black students for a conspiracy to commit a misdemeanor to between 1 and 25 years in the state penitentiary in California. These are the kind of things that are happening. The courts are leaning towards law and order. We're for law and order, too. We're for law and order where we want equality. We want to be able to have breakfast for children. We want to be able to have our own community control of the police. We want to be able to have our own opportunity to make a living without having somebody come in and tell us, if you've got five kids, you can have X numbers of dollars, and if you have two kids, you get X numbers of dollars. That kind of regimented life is prison life, and we're not for that. That's not law and order. We're for the kind of law and order that gives us those privileges that we're talking about. But if the answer to the desires of the black community is to have more food, to have breakfast for children, to have a decent medical program, a place to live that's not infested with rats, and an opportunity to live, if the answer to the white community is to have more policemen, if that's their answer to law and order, then we are in chaos and everything else is irrelevant. While I'm on the subject of judicial process, take the Chicago 7 case, which was originally the 8 case. I don't know what that jury is going to do. Even assuming, for the sake of optimistic thinking, that the jury is going to acquit all of these defendants, they have not been acquitted. Because the minute a man or a woman has to stand trial for 5 or 6 months and has to have thousands and thousands of dollars of legal time in order to be able to get a semblance of justice, when you have to go through that kind of an ordeal, then that is not justice. And of course, I'm satisfied with this judge. He's going to find the lawyers in contempt of court. He's going to find all of the defendants in contempt of court, just as he gave that savage, barbaric sentence to Bobby Seale. And I think the world today saw what a beautiful human being Bobby Seale is. Even after the vicious treatment that Judge Hoffman had rendered towards him, he was pleasant and respectable and nice to that judge. Even to the man who caused and generated the activities like United States Attorney or Assistant United States Attorney Schultz, you can see how polite Bobby was to him. This is the kind of a man that relates and does not harbor a revenge. He does harbor the hunger, the want, and the deprivation, and the police brutality, or as they call it, the pig brutality, against all people who are underprivileged.
Charles, you were in California, as I said earlier in the interview, ill when this cruel and inhuman, I don't think there are any accurate words to describe what happened to a man, and particularly to a black man in that courtroom. What do you think the impact of that was on the country, as you saw it, and on black people, especially in this country, in terms of their realizations as to what they're up against with this kind of emergent fascism in this country?
Well, I believe what happened was that the black America saw in the 1969 that things haven't changed since the day that they were slaves. And they knew all this. And if Hoffman had to refresh their memories, he did that.
Yeah, I think their memories were more than adequately refreshed by that. We haven't heard much about Bobby since he was taken from Chicago. And of course, there have been some articles in the Black Panther Party newspaper from Bobby while he was serving time in the county jail. In terms of the legal thing, so the legal force, the legal arm of the American government, what's in store for Bobby now?
Well, right now he's facing extradition proceedings in California, and I have until the 16th of February in order to file a writ of habeas corpus, but we're not going to be successful in that. He's eventually going to have to go to Connecticut and face up a trumped up, when I say trumped up, I mean trumped up, charges of a conspiracy to commit kidnapping, conspiracy to commit murder. They want to put him in the electric chair.
And pretty much the same thing is in store for the rest of the members of the Central Committee and for any member of the Black Panther Party in this country. Would you say that's correct?
Yes, I would. I would say that they're attempting to commit genocide on the entire Black Panther Party. And I might say, as an aside, members of the Black Panther Party are resigned that their faith is death, their faith is prison. But they don't want to die in vain. They don't want to make the sacrifice in vain. Huey Newton wants to start relating to the community so that the communities will start and supplant leadership when other leaders are gone. And perhaps if they start relating to the community and do the things that are necessary in the community of education, voters' registration, so that the black people, when they get on a jury, will not be a rubber stamp of this racist society, racist course that we have. And perhaps that's the only way we're going to be able to stop it, so that the vanguard party that the Black Panther Party is will start having to relate to the everyday needs of the community. They believe in socialism, as you know, and Huey Newton is going to come out with a position paper on American type of socialism as distinguished from socialism that's applied in other countries. He points out that although they are Marxist-Leninist studies and they're guided that as a guide to action, every country has to have its own form of socialism according to its own developments. And he believes that this will be able to be related to the community so that they will be able to understand it and they will not be sidetracked by collateral interference with their train of thought and will be able to give the kind of support that the community should have.
What do you think will be the outcome of the Connecticut case? Do you actually believe that they're definitely itching for a conviction, and one which includes possibly the electric chair for Bobby Seale, who's been described, I think he himself described himself as a stand-up comedian, a draftsman, an architect, a wide variety of things. And one of the artists in the courtroom described him as a poet, said he had a poet's face and a poet's eyes and spoke like a poet. The thought of this man going to the electric chair on trumped-up charges because he happens to believe in black liberation is frightening, to say the least. In terms of your own position as a movement lawyer, I think you once said that you, for one, never intended to walk into a courtroom and say Heil Hitler to a judge. Do you think that the experiences that you are having, the experiences that other people's lawyers are having, have in some way generated in the younger members of the legal profession some kind of commitment, some kind of dedication to become people's lawyers and to fight the battles for the people in the courtrooms?
Well, I hope it has. I'm always reminded of what Huey Newton says, that the power of the people is greater than man's technocracy.
I'll go you one better. I remember one of Fred Hampton's sayings, I'm so proletarian intoxicated, I will not be astronomically intimidated. What do you think, by the way, speaking of Fred, for those of you who don't know about Fred Hampton, he was the chairman of the Black Panther Party for the state of Illinois, who was murdered in his bed by state's attorney's police here in the city of Chicago. Do you think that this kind of tactic, Charles, is another use, another form of genocide, another form of exterminating people where they can't get their victories in the courtrooms with prison sentences and so on, that they'll just resort to murder, to out-and-out murder of black people and especially members of the Panther Party?
Oh, absolutely. The best example of that is what happened to Malcolm X. And if Huey Newton was out on the street, his life would not be safe. I'm satisfied of that. Bobby's life isn't safe. David Hilliard's life isn't safe. Even my life isn't safe, very frankly. I've been threatened time and time again. I received all kinds of threats. But we can't stop at things like that. None of us want to be liquidated. As a matter of fact, I would like to see more of life. And a man like Huey loves life. He doesn't want to lose his life. Bobby is a perfect example of a man who loves life. But in order to live, you have to be able to make sacrifices to live. And if it requires people to lay their life on the chopping line, it has to be done.